Okay, you are very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And very shortly, as I say, we're going to be speaking about a couple of issues with Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. He's joining us just as we speak. Of course, we had that big controversy about the vote in the Dáil last night. But I want to speak first with Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. He is the Sinn Féin spokesperson on fisheries and the marine, about a marine matter. Padraig, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
And sorry to hold you after 10, obviously, with the conversation on the what's happening in Donegal GEA. It ran over a little bit. I appreciate your patience. Right, what is the situation that allows for these small cities, effectively, these super trawlers to fish off our waters? Under what license and are they doing so?
Yeah, it's actually, which is quite shocking, really. It's legal. It's under the Common Fisheries Policy. And what happens in many member states is they are allocated a quota of a particular species, let's say mackerel or blue whiting, in the Irish Exclusive Economic Zone. So basically, for your listeners' benefit, from the 0 to 6 mile around our coast, that is exclusively for Irish boats. From the 6 to 12 is a mix of Irish and some European boats. And then from the 12 mile limit to the 200 mile limit, that's all under the control of the Common Fisheries Policy. And you can have boats from all around Europe, allocated quota. So what happens with these huge corporations, in this case, one Dutch corporation, they own a huge fleet of vessels, but they own the two largest super trawlers in the world. And they were out fishing in those waters legally with quota from a range of different countries. So in some countries, they basically allocate it to corporations, pretty much, and it can be exchanged between countries. It's perfectly legal and it's totally wrong, Greg.
Right, so let's just say, and we'll talk about the impact and on us and what have you, but just in terms of if there were a factory on land, okay, we would be able to inspect it, ensure best practice, make sure it's not damaging any other species. If it was a chicken factory, right, we wouldn't want it killing pigs. You know, stuff like that there, basic stuff. Like, how do we ensure how these vessels operate out there in terms of the damage to fish they're not allowed to catch? Do they die? Do they just chuck them out? Other marine life, you know, supplementary damage that they cause, do they? And how are they policed?
You see, this is why I do believe a ban is essential. In Australia, they banned some of the largest super trawlers in their waters. They've been banned now for years from fishing in Australian waters. The difficulty is, if you look at the Sea Fisheries Protection Authority, the SFPA, and indeed the Navy, we're told that they can't board these vessels if the weather gets too bad at all. So therefore, they cannot do their job to make sure that these vessels are catching what they say they've caught. The other issue is, for just a year ago, one of these vessels, the Margiris, had been responsible for 100,000 dead fish in the Bay of Biscay. Basically, they were discarding fish that weren't of economic value. There's also concerns about catching dolphins and other marine life in these massive, massive nets. Like, you could fit a number of jumbo jets into the size of these. They're literally just hoovering up massive amounts.
They're completely
of fish,
indiscriminate, aren't they? They're completely indiscriminate.
Yeah, it's really damaging to the ecosystem. Like, when you read the Common Fisheries Policy, and like every fisherman listening today in fishing communities know that, you know, it is full of lofty language, but ultimately they're allowing big corporations with massive vessels to take up fish that should be available to boats some Killybegs, Burton Port, Greencastle, and so on. And
but would it be more tolerable if the allocations that these people are legally fishing with, if they were on normal-sized vessels? Do you know what I mean? And obviously, there's an nets are generally indiscriminate, okay? But it wouldn't be on such a scale. It would be easier managed. Like, do the presence of these super trawlers in particular cause a problem? You know, maybe we can fight for our fair share down the line, but in terms of how we do the fishing and the general impact on the general life of the sea, would that be reason enough to ban these super trawlers, even if 8 smaller ships took their place, if that makes sense?
Yeah, because the what happens with the size of these nets is they're literally taking up the entire school of fish, you know, all sizes, and you know it's really damaging to the sustainability of the stock. Now they argue that's not the case, but I absolutely do not accept that. I think that when you have trawlers of this size, you know it's not sustainable fishing. To me, what you need, I mean, for example, the biggest vessel in the Irish fleet, as I understand it today, is about half the size of one of these super trawlers. I think that's an acceptable size. So there's a balance of things we need to do. We need to protect the 6 mile for the inshore efficient fleet, and I very much agree with that, smaller boats in the inshore. And then we need to make sure that the mid-sized vessels get a fair share, Irish vessels get a fair share of the fish. And that's the ultimate issue, because right now, Greg, as we speak, the Irish government are overseeing the decommissioning of dozens of Irish fishing vessels. That's about 500 more jobs lost in Irish fishing communities, including in Donegal. While we're looking out at a small city hoovering up fish, it's madness.
But I just want us to be completely open and frank with listeners as well, though. I mean, this is not necessarily something a Sinn Féin government could reverse. This is a Europe-wide problem, okay? And you might find yourself, if you're an outspoken marine spokesperson, saying, look, it's very, very bad what's going on. I'm making strong representatives in Europe, but I'm being frustrated at every turn, and then come back really with the same deal that Charlie McConnellogue lands back. And in reality, that is the truth here, isn't it?
Yeah, but you see, you have to, first of all, say that it's wrong. And the problem is I've never seen the government say that this is wrong, an Irish government. And, you know, indeed, the Irish government actually funded super trawlers being built in Ireland in the past, in the recent past. It is wrong. And like, so you have to start from the premise that you agree it's wrong, and then you campaign, you seek to build alliances. Now, yes, it has to be changed at European level. It has to be agreed with other European member states, but at least try, at least go and say that it's wrong, say it out loud. And that's my problem is, so as I say, I've commenced a petition. There have been petitions in the past on super trawlers in Ireland. I've commenced another one just to try and put another focus.
Are you surprised that the Green Party aren't saying anything about this? Because look, let's put aside how the quotas are divided up. Right, I maybe they have, sorry, and I don't want to do any members of the Green Party a disservice if they have, but this is something Eamon Ryan should be standing up opposite you and going, you know what, I have to agree with you here. This is not a very environmentally or humane way, for that matter, of catching fish. Like they went in there, I thought, really to sort of be the, you know, to be the check and balance on the government on matters like this. I mean, there is a very strong environmental argument against these super trawlers in our waters. Why are we not hearing more from the Greens on this?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's, even when you look at forestry policy, like there's whole areas of policy that the Greens are sort of hit and miss on. I mean, I think most people would agree that we need to, you know, fish sustainably. We need to protect, it's a precious stock. And I don't know any fisherman that I speak to in Donegal or across Ireland that doesn't agree with that. You know, that you have to have science, you have to fish sustainably, you have to try and make sure that future generations can do that. So no, I haven't heard the Green Party vociferous on this issue. And, you know, I here's a government who have not stated that super trawlers should not be in our waters. Like we had off the Donegal coast, we had the two largest super trawlers in the world and their sister ship, the Helen Mary. All three vessels are owned by the same Dutch corporation, and they're literally just hoovering up wealth that really should belong to, in a significant way, to the Irish people. And
these type of farming practices would never be allowed on land.
No.
So why should they be allowed in our waters? I mean, you know, if common sense were to prevail, you would not permit this on land for a myriad of reasons. Why should it be allowed in the waters, many people might ask?
Yeah, and you know, every year, I was just looking back, Greg, and I mean, maybe for the last 8, 9, 10 years, every year there's reports of these vessels, and every year I or other previous Sinn Féin spokespersons in fisheries have spoken out about this. But I mean, we need our government to agree that it's wrong, that this goes against. I mean, you know, if you talk to any fisherman in Donegal, they'll tell you, no matter what size of their vessel, the Sea Fisheries Protection Authority, and they would say are being harassing them, chasing them around, looking at paperwork, inspecting their landings. This unbelievable oversight of Irish fishermen, way beyond any other country.
Look, there's more oversight for a fella going out to catch a few crabs in a pond than there is a 500-foot super trawler. I mean, that's just the way it is. Right, okay, I just want to get a word with you too, if that's okay. And we have invited government representatives. Some will never speak to us again, it seems, in this county. Others are unavailable. That's up to them. There was a vote last night on the eviction ban. It's going ahead, seemingly, at the end of April. It will inevitably lead, and the government have conceded this, it will inevitably lead to an increase in homelessness. It will lead to an increase in homelessness here in our region as well. What was Sinn Féin proposing?
Well, we believe that the ban, I suppose first thing I want to say is in Donegal, you just cannot find somewhere to rent, you know. No matter if you're a single person or a family, it's extremely difficult to find somewhere to rent. And I contacted Donegal County Council last week, and in terms of emergency accommodation, it's extremely limited. I mean, so if you present that you're being asked to move from your house and you can't find anywhere to rent, I don't know what the hell you're going to do. Like, I just don't know what families are going to do. So what we proposed in that emergency was to extend the eviction ban up to next January, but not just do that, because we need to do a lot more. We need to be looking at if there's a situation now where a landlord has given a notice to their tenants that we want to sell this house, which is absolutely legitimate in normal circumstances, that's okay. Then the council should look about purchasing that property. It's called a tenant in situ.
Is there not a complication with so much public money going in to compete in the property market, which effectively is what would happen? The council would get first dibs on property. This, every action has a reaction, though. There's a consequence to everything that you do.
Well, I think that the tenant in situ, the government say they support that, they agree with that, but they're not actioning it. There's no sense of urgency. And like, if you talk to Donegal County Council, the housing department, I don't believe they have the resources to respond to what is an emergency in Donegal. And Greg, we're not even thrown in defective blocks, for God's sake.
We have
a perfect storm in Donegal.
So it's deferred. Let's just say you were successful. It's put back to the end of the year, right? What do you do in the interim that would have any material impact on it? Because, you know, even if you introduce that one measure that you gave in an example, how many people actually would end up with secure accommodation in the short period that we're talking of? So what would your party have done that would actually, with the breathing space that would have been there, prevented an increase in homelessness?
Yeah, that's just one measure, the tenant in situ. The other measure, which is critical, is vacant properties. There's about 8,000 vacant properties, and not including holiday homes now, 8,000 vacant properties. I would say any listener, I'm one of them, who lives in a housing estate, there'll be at least one vacant property in your housing estate, many instances. So we need Donegal County Council to be properly, now urgently resourced with officers who can go out and turn around those vacant properties with the same type of attitude that COVID emergency.
But you see, we can't get the council to turn around one of their own houses in years. Not one that they have to buy or require, or one that's derelict. I'm on about a house where a tenant moves out and the same people that you talk of know they're in the same housing estates, and that house sits there empty for years. People see the ovens and cookers and everything being brought out, and then nothing. You know, we can't even, how could we trust, not entrust, sorry, is the word I wanted to use. How could we entrust the system that we have now to do what you want when we can't turn around perfectly good houses, i.e., tidy them up a little bit and just get someone off the housing wait and listen into them?
See, now you're hitting on something which is absolutely crucial that we have to say out loud. There's no sense of urgency to what is a crisis. And like, not, you know, we've had a housing emergency now, you know, for a number of years, but defective blocks on top of it in Donegal. When I talk to Donegal County Council, I do not believe they're being provided with the resources, with the staff, that reflects the scale of the emergency. Absolutely not. So what you're describing is legitimate, Greg, but it has to change. Like, it has to change now, tomorrow, to address the scale of the crisis that we have.
All right, Deputy Thomas Pringle's with us as well. Thanks very much for your time, Thomas. I do appreciate it. You voted against the government yesterday. I mean, would you have voted with Sinn Féin to oppose the government, or you believe that party actually has a plan that might work?
Well, I think that there's two things. First of all, you have to oppose the government because whatever the government are doing certainly isn't working. And there's no, they have no intention of doing anything that is likely to work or possible to work anyway. So I think the first thing has to be done is that the government has to be rejected on that point of view. And then Sinn Féin are putting forward proposals that may work. At least they're putting their proposals coming forward from them, and that would try and make a difference to people's lives, and that's what's important. The reality is that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Green Party don't care. And it's plain to be seen.
Well, if they don't care, neither do a big batch of independents. What is your view on their votes effectively being, well, I don't know, I've read somewhere them being described as being bought as an independent politician. How does that make you feel?
Well, this independent isn't up for sale.
No, I did to completely distinguish you from them. But go on ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, well, that's the reality. I think they were completely short-sighted. I think they were ridiculous, and they're trying to dress up the fact that they got some sort of concessions from the government as to calm their consciences for doing what I think was wrong. And the reality of the situation is that even if the independents had voted against the government still had the numbers anyway to survive the vote.
Yeah.
And so the government won, I think, by 14 or 15 votes. Last night, so they still would have had a majority of 8 or 9, regardless of the independents, which makes their decision even stranger, as far as I can see. And the reality is that the government should be doing stuff and should care, but they don't. And that's the bottom line with it. Like, I mean, and no matter what anybody says, the government representatives in the county are nice people. They're grand people you chat to in the street. But the reality is that the parties they represent is doing this, and the parties they represent will make more people homeless over the next couple of months.
Well, they were invited on this programme but declined to comment. Just one word on the independents, Deputy McLaughlin. Do you know what they would have been given? What happens in that scenario? What are they given and how much does it cost? And why is that information not public?
That's a very good question, Greg. Like a lot of those independents, are, in my opinion, Fine Gaelers, and maybe one or two of them Fianna Fáilers. That's the gene pool they come from. They're very, very close to government. When you watch questions, and me and Thomas are sitting at all these questions,
I said earlier on the show, we were reminded, right, in terms of the defective concrete crisis, that this is taxpayers' money and we have to be very careful how that's spent. I want to know, and maybe it'll put an end to this type of politics, what they were promised and how much the cost to the Exchequer is to deliver on those promises. Because those are votes that are being purchased. And we have to get away from that type of politics. We need to know what they got and how much it cost. And that surely is a matter of public interest.
Well, the government won't say that, Greg, at all. But we will see over the next coming months announcements that'll take place, and we can put two and two together.
Yeah,
and
but
get
we shouldn't have to do that. I don't want to engage politically, i.e., vote in that system anymore. I don't want to. It's horrendous.
Vote out Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Well, now come here. I'm not going to talk about my voting behaviours. I understand exactly what you're saying. By the way, I do. But Deputy McLaughlin, is that something that you could commit that your party will not be engaged in buying the support of independents if you are in government and you need their support?
Yeah, I mean, if they have agreed projects and constituencies, you should be upfront about that. I mean, there were deals done in Donegal in the past.
This is about people not going homeless, though.
In fairness.
Like, this is about people, right? I don't mind if they got some amendments as it relates to housing or something, right? I get that. But if this is about a cat lab in a hospital somewhere or something, right, which is very important, don't get me wrong, but that's the side hustle on a hit situation that's going to lead to thousands more people being homeless. That is not democratic, or I don't know what it is, but it has to stop that practice, surely.
Yeah, well, the difficulty, though, is there's people who get elected in some of these constituencies as TDs, but they're actually Fine Gael. Like, some of them were former Fine Gael TDs, some of them ran for Fine Gael, for election, and they still are, Fine Gael TDs. Me and Thomas see it. I mean, the questions they ask, it's embarrassing. Like, it's almost like a government TD asking the question. They've clearly lined it up. The answer the minister gives, that's a very good question. I know you're working very hard on that issue in your constituency. You know, it's just a scam.
And in fairness, Deputy Pringle, at the time of a government formation, you would be asked, if you haven't been, but you have been in the past, I'm sure, have you got a wish list that perhaps could persuade you to support this government or this formation of a government? That's what happens.
Yeah, that's what happens. And invariably, the government or the prospective government couldn't live with what I wanted from them, because it's about actually making the government responsive to all citizens in the country, and that benefits your citizens in Donegal the same as it would anywhere else. And governments don't want to do that, mm-hmm. and they see independence as being a cheap buy. And in reality, a lot of the stuff that independents look for is stuff that's going to be delivered, and you're basically only speeding it up rather than actually delivering something different or something new. And that's not what I believe the politics should be about. I believe politics should be about raising everybody's boats, so that then when everybody's raised up, then your own constituency is raised up as well.
All right, do you have 10 minutes more, or do either of you need to go?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
thanks. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, because I want to bring Karina into the conversation. Karina, are you there? Karina, it's great here. How are you?
Hi.
Good to have you with us. No problem there. Thank you very much for joining us. You are one of almost 90 people who have been served eviction notices between July and September of 2022. What's your situation, and what reality is now facing you, Karina, and your family?
So we moved back up from Westmead. I'm originally from Donegal. After about 6 months of searching for a house, when a private landlord reached out to me and said, you can have my house on the promise of 24 months. We moved the whole way up. I've got two little kids. We've got changed jobs, got our childcare, got our places in crash and everything, only to wake up there on the 5th of March saying, you've got your 3 months notice to be out of the house. So we've only been in the house 3 months, and we've been served a 3 months eviction now. And realistically, there's no houses anywhere available. We have been searching and searching and searching, and there's just nothing available.
Was there a reason given to you, Karina, as to why you were being thrown out of the house?
His own family issues. He needed to move back into the property.
I presume, other than the rent you've paid also, you sort of made efforts to make the house your own, if you know what I mean. I presume that happened, did it?
Yeah, so we have put about €500 of painting into the house. We fixed oil tanks, stoves, had boiler services, like just to upkeep the house in general, because it wasn't in the best condition when we first moved in. But we didn't mind when we were promised a long-term home. But now, not even, 12, 15 weeks into being in the house, we've been asked to move out, and that's just gut-wrenching. It's just, oh.
Now, you have no protection.
It's not fair.
There's no fault on you, but now you've got no protection. What next for you and your family?
We have been trying to get onto the social housing. I've never been on it. Trying to get onto social housing. We have been contacting as many people as I can possibly think of. I've contacted Micheál Colum. I've contacted every auctioneer that I can think of around locally, my ex-landlords that I've had, everyone that I can think of. I have been reaching out Facebook, Marketplace, Done Deal, everywhere that I can think, just to try get a house. And there's only been one snap. The house that is there, I'm up against eight other families within that little small area that I live.
And we're not talking about Dublin here or the suburbs of Cork or something. We're talking about is Donegal here. You're up against eight other families. Now, what happens the day after your eviction is served, that you leave? Where do you go? What do you do?
We don't have anywhere.
I mean, that's a very difficult way to live your life, isn't it?
Yeah, the anxieties and the stress it's not been fun now over the past 2-3 weeks.
All right, Karina, thanks for helping us explain the reality for people, and I hope you get sorted really soon. I really do, particularly for you and your partner, but particularly the children who are settling into their care and what have you. All right, Karina, is there anything you want to add? By the way, sorry, I shouldn't presume that you've finished. Is there something that you want to say yourself?
No, it's just that there's such a large volume of houses that are sitting empty, but a lot of landlords are just Airbnb-ing them, or they're just not having them at all advertised. Like, we drove every back road that we could think of around locally, and the amount of houses that are sitting vacant and in good condition, but they're just not advertised. We don't know who owns them. Are they Airbnb'd? They're just, nobody's willing to put it on the market for people that are in my situation where, you know, we can't afford to get, we don't make enough money to get a mortgage, but we make too much money to get help socially to try get a house. And it's just, we're stuck between a rock and a hard stone. We just don't know where to go or, you know, what to do next.
All right, Karina, listen, I hope you get sorted. Yeah. Thank you for that. We are in the company as well, still with Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle, Sinn Féin Deputy Patrick McLaughlin. Thomas, that is, I mean, Karina's is the reality that she's stuck between that rock and the hard place. There's one house up for grabs in the small local area, eight other families competing with it, and sure, it might even come down to who you know or who you don't know at that point. It's a desperate situation for one young family, and that's one of probably 5,000 in the same boat this morning.
Yeah, it's shocking, Greg. And I mean, I see it every week in the office, at home as well. You're talking to people, and it's so frustrating. There's absolutely nothing you can do for them, because this crazy situation that we have, where the government has set a maximum limit of income limit that people can get on the housing list. So people like Karina and that there, and I meet people like that every week. They're at working, trying to make a living. They can't get on the housing list because they're earning too much, and they'll never ever get a mortgage because they're not earning enough to get a mortgage to buy a house. And yet you look around Donegal and there's houses sitting on Airbnb that are not available.
Yeah, but Thomas, how do you balance, right? You know, how
well,
do
I'll
you...
Well, I'll tell you how I would balance it, Greg. I would put a 50% tax on Airbnb income straight away, and I would make permanent let tax-free, and let landlords then make the property available for a permanent let. They would pay no tax on the income, and that would be permanent let. But if they want to stay in Airbnb, let them stay in Airbnb, but I would tax the hell out of them, because this is an emergency and this is a crisis. And I see people coming in like Karina every week that are in a desperate situation, and there's nothing you can say to them. But yet, you can walk, take 10 steps from my office, and you can pass 3 or 4 Airbnb.
Stephanie McLaughlin, how do you balance people's right to property ownership and to do with it what they wish, but then also the clear housing needs that we have? I mean, Thomas is very clear in what he'd do. Tax them out of Airbnbs, incentivise them into long-term rents. It's a simple enough prospect.
Yeah, I think if we step back, if you look over the last 10 years, Fine Gael have been in power, obviously from 2011 through to now. But if you go from that period of 2011, for 10 years, we built around 500 houses in 1 year. Back in the early 2000s, we built more in 1 year than we built in 11 years. We stopped building social housing. We pushed everybody into private rental who were in social housing. Thomas's point, just for listeners, because it's so important that Karina came on your show today, because I don't think people who aren't in this situation just get how serious it is. Like, if you earn as a family now, not a person, if you earn more than €30,000, you can't get on. You're not on the social housing list. You're on your own EO, right? And if rent right now, it can be anything over, it can be over €1,000 in North Donegal for sure, for a typical 3 or 4 bedrooms.
It's the same downside. It's the same in Ballyshannon, 1,400 a month.
You know, it's doubled. Like, literally rent has doubled in a number of years. So those families who aren't on the social housing list are paying crazy rent, and there's nowhere to be got because we've put because we weren't building council houses.
Yeah, but
everybody was
in private
rental. I
hate to say we are where we are, right? And of course, here in Donegal as well, we've got people, if they're lucky enough to get on a scheme, or perhaps even they aren't, also in the housing market trying to get out of their collapsing principal private residence. So there's an acute problem here even beyond that. So for the purpose of it, and I'll let you go after this, we are actually where we are now, right? So what do we do in the next, because something has to be done in the next 3 months and 6 months, not, we can't be looking at 10 and 15 and 20 years. Yes, that has to be there, but we have an immediate problem now. Karina and the 90 odd others and many, many more, the couch surfers, all of those there's hundreds of them in this county. What do we do in the short term? And I'll bring that to Thomas and then we'll wrap it up. after you, Pádraig.
Yeah, well, as I said, right, there are 88 families. We know there are 88 families right now that have an eviction notice. These are people who have done nothing wrong. They've paid their rent. They've looked after the place they're in. They're no-fault evictions, as they're called, right? So those people are facing that now. I believe that if Donegal County Council, if the government are serious, that you work with the local authority, and you urgently go after the vacant properties that are out there, and you look at properties where you can purchase them in situ. So if a landlord says...
Do you trust the local authority to administer the Mica redress scheme?
Well, I don't think that Donegal County Council should be dealing with the fact that the housing agency should be dealing with that.
But part of that reason probably is because you don't think they have the resources maybe or what.
No. I believe the housing agency should be dealing with defective blocks, and it should be 100% redress like it was
I get that.
Scheme.
I was just curious
Donegal
if you...
Donegal County Council shouldn't deal with it at all.
Right, okay. But you would trust the council and you believe they should be empowered more. I don't know how much actual available property is out there for them to take over.
There's around 8,000 vacant properties in Donegal. And a very big chunk of them are properties that could be turned around quickly with the right mentality. I see it in my own community.
Okay,
I see it all over Donegal.
Thomas, in the last 30 seconds, then what do you do in the immediate term? Because this is an immediate problem. And it's actually so immediate now. It's the end of next month.
First of all, continue the eviction ban so that nobody be evicted into homelessness at any stage. I would make sure that Airbnb would be taxed, like I said already, that the tax to make it tax and tax free for long term lets to make sure that they're available. If property owners want to stay in Airbnb, good luck to them. Fair enough, they pay the tax for it. I would also then ensure that the legislation has to be, as I just heard this morning there, that legislation has to be passed to allow this tenant in situ scheme to take place. That's going to put back 6 or 8 months at least before that legislation is in place. So the eviction ban has to stay in place to make that happen. And then I would say to all the local authorities, get out and do it.
All right.
And that's the reality of the
situation. Thomas Pringle, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And the same too to Deputy Pádraig McLoughlin. As we say, we invited government representatives on to join the conversation. Not available or don't want to. Greg, we're a family of six. Bought my own home as a single man when I was 25. Tiny two-bed house. Now we scraped up the funds to buy the derelict house next door, but the derelict grant application says I have to be selling my existing house to avail of it. Wow, okay. I wasn't familiar with that caveat in that. Are we on about this the same grant that I'm thinking of, the one that's been pushed quite a lot as of late? I didn't think you even had to live in it. Or maybe that was if you owned it at a certain time. I'd have to just go through that. That doesn't seem right. That means you're not getting the money then to bring another house into use. A caller says it's very silly to say we can bar super trawlers. Our trawlers could also be barred from fishing in other areas. Deputy McLaughlin does not know anything about fisheries. I think what he was saying, and I'm certainly not a spokesperson, is that you make it illegal, as Australia has done, for these types of trawlers to scoop up all that they scoop up. They discarded 100,000 healthy fish dead off the south of Spain not so long ago. That we could have a conversation maybe about the allocation of quota down the line, but immediately there are more environmentally friendly ways of fishing these fish with smaller vessels. I think that's what he was saying. Yes, Greg, you're 100% right. I passed two council houses on my daily walk, lying empty for 6 months or more. Really good-looking houses. The mind boggles. If we can't be doing that, how can we sort of put in some sort of a plan to... how can we put in some sort of a plan for the local authority to go around and scoop up derelict properties and bring them to market? House in Boncrana, bought by the council at least 10 years ago, was fully renovated and has lain empty since. Shocking, they say. It is sound shocking. Another, those who voted last night in favour should be hanging their heads in shame this morning. The icing on the cake that the government do not have the people of Ireland's best interest at heart. They don't care about those who are already struggling. Absolutely shocking. Another, does anyone know where the money's going exactly for Chrysler? Is there a breakdown? I'm not really quite sure. And I don't think they've decided what they're doing with the rest of it yet in full. And I'm not sure really that's... I don't know is the answer. A caller says, I think there should be a similar scheme introduced as to last year where people were paid to take in refugees. It might alleviate the housing crisis. I mean, they are talking about making the rent a room. You can rent out part of your house to someone and it not affect social welfare payments, etc., things like that. I think that's part of what they're planning. Sounds kind of like what you're talking about. I'm not really sure, though, when it came down to it, how many people actually are sharing their property with refugees. There was a similar initiative off the back of the situation in Syria. A lot of people offered their properties, but either there was foot dragging in connecting people that need them to the properties, or people changed their minds and pulled out. A caller says, I think what is more frightening is the hold the EU has over Ireland. Look at what happened with the Airbnbs. We should leave, believes that caller there. Did we ever see the day that we'd see Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael vote to evict people and make them homeless? Not surprised at the Greens, as they're on a different planet. That's what that caller says. But there are those out there who, the people voted last night to end the eviction ban, who actually were out protesting and marching to bring an end to homelessness. That's the kind of political world we live in now. Can't believe this government making thousands of our people homeless. They had 6 months to plan for this. That girl's right. So many houses empty and boarded up in every town and every county in Ireland, and not all boarded up either. There's a lot of houses that are seemingly just ready to go for the rental market. Greg, the excuse that landlord used family issues is the oldest trick in the book. There is a rental house next to us, and I know the landlord has used this excuse to put people out and then raise the price. It's a disgrace. He threw a beautiful young family out from Egypt just to increase rent, that caller believes.